turned.
Adjunct, I am glad you're here. Thank you, High Mage.
After he left, Lorne sank into her chair, and her mind travelled back 9 years, to the sights and sounds experienced by a child, to a night, one particular night in the Mouse, when every nightmare a young girl's imagination could hold became real. She remembered blood, blood everywhere, and the empty faces of her mother, her father, and older brother. Faces numbed by the realization that they had been spared, that the blood wasn't their own. As the memory stalked once again through her mind, a name rode the winds, rustling in the air, as if clawing through dead branches. Lorne's lips parted, and she whispered, "Tattersail." The sorceress had found the strength to leave her bed. She now stood at the window, leaning with one hand against the frame for support, and looked down on a street crowded with military wagons. The systematic plunder that quartermasters called resupply was well underway. The eviction of nobility and gentry from their familial estates for the stationing of the officer corps, of which she was one, had ended days ago, while the repairing of the outer walls, the refitting of sundered gates, and the clearing of moon rain continued apace. She was glad she'd missed the river of corpses that must have filled the city streets during the initial phase of cleanup. Wagon after wagon, groaning beneath the weight of crushed bodies, white flesh seared by fire and slashed by sword, rat-gnawed and raven-pecked, men, women, and children. It was a scene she had witnessed before, and she had no wish ever to see it again. Now shock and terror had seeped down and out of sight. Scenes of normality reappeared as farmers and merchants emerged from hiding to meet the needs of occupiers and occupied alike. Malazan healers had swept the city, rooting out the birthing of plague and treating common ailments among all those they touched. No citizen would have been turned from their path. And sentiments began the long, perfectly planned swing. Soon, Tattersail knew, there'd be the culling of the nobility, a scourge that would raise to the gallows the greediest, least liked nobles. And the executions would be public, a tried and true procedure that swelled recruitment on a tide of base vengeance, with every hand stained by a righteous glee. A sword in such hands completed the conspiracy, and included all players in the hunt for the next victim to the cause, the Empire's cause. She'd seen it run its course in 100 such cities. No matter how benign the original rulers, no matter how generous the nobility, the word of empire, weighted by might, twisted the past into a tyranny of demons. A sad comment on humanity, a bitter lesson made foul by her own role in it. In her mind returned the faces of the bridge burners, a strange counterpoint to the cynicism with which she viewed all around her. Whiskey Jack, a man pushed to the edge, or rather the edge creeping on him on all sides, a crumbling of beliefs, a failing of faiths, leaving as his last claim to humanity his squad, a shrinking handful of the only people that mattered anymore. But he held on, and he pushed back. Push back hard. She liked to think. No, she wanted to believe. He would win out in the end. That he'd live to see his world stripped of the Empire. Quick Ben and Kalam, seeking to take the responsibility from their sergeant's shoulders. It was their only means of loving the man, though they'd never put it in such terms. In the others, barring Sorry, she saw the same. Yet with them there was a desperation that she found endearing, a childlike yearning to relieve Whiskey Jack of everything their grim place had laid upon him. She responded to them in a way deeper than she'd thought possible, from a core she'd long been convinced was burned out, the ashes scattered in silent lament, a core no mage could afford. Tattersail recognized the danger, but that only made it all the more alluring. sorry was another matter, and she found herself avoiding even thinking about that young woman. And that left Paran. What to do about this captain? At the moment, the man was in the room, seated on the bed behind her and oiling his sword, Chance. They'd not spoken much since she'd awakened 4 days ago. There was still too much distrust. Perhaps it was that mystery, that uncertainty, that made them so attracted to one another. And the attraction was obvious. Even now, with her back to the man, she sensed a taut thread between them. Whatever energy burned between them, it felt dangerous, which made it exciting. Tattersail sighed. Hairlock had appeared this very morning, eager and agitated about something. The puppet would not answer their queries, but the sorceress suspected that Hairlock had found a trail, and it seemed it might take the puppet out of Pale and on to Derujistan. That was not a happy thought. She stiffened as the ward she had placed outside her door was tripped. Tattersail whirled to Paran.
"A visitor," she said.
He rose, Chance in his hands. The sorceress waved her hand over him.
"You're no longer visible, Captain, nor can anyone sense your presence. Make no sound, and wait here."
She strode into the outer room, just as a soft knock sounded on the door. She opened it to see a young marine standing in the hallway.
"What is it?"
she demanded. The marine bowed.
"Hyphis Dujek is inquiring as to your health, sorceress."
"Much better," she said. "That's kind of him. Now if you'll..."
The marine interrupted diffidently.
"If you answered as you just have, I am to convey the High Fist's request that you attend a formal supper this evening in the main building."
Tattersail cursed silently. She shouldn't have told the truth. Now it was too late. A request from her commander was not something that could be denied.
"Inform the High Fist that I will be honored to share his company over supper."
A thought struck her.
"May I ask who else will be present?" "High Mage Taishrin, a messenger named Tok the Younger, and Adjunct Lorne."
"Adjunct Lorne is here?"
"Arrived this morning, sorceress."
"Oh, Hood's breath."
"Convey my reply,"
Tattersail said, struggling against a rising tide of fear. She shut the door, then heard the marine's boots hurrying down the hallway. "What's wrong?" Paran asked from the opposite doorway. She faced him.
"Put that sword away, Captain."
She walked over to the dresser and began rummaging through the drawers.
"I'm to attend a dinner," she said.
Paran approached. "An official gathering?" Tattersail nodded distractedly.
"With Adjunct Lorne there as well. As if Taishrin isn't bad enough."
The captain murmured, "So, she's finally arrived." Tattersail froze. She turned to him slowly.
"You've been expecting her, haven't you?"
Paran started and looked at her with frightened eyes. She realized his mumbling hadn't been meant for her ears.
"Damn it," she hissed. "You're working for her."
The captain's answer was clear as he spun round. She watched him vanish into the bedroom, her thoughts a storm of fury. The threads of conspiracy now thrummed in her mind. So, Quick Ben's suspicions had been accurate. A plan was afoot to kill the squad. Did that make her life at risk as well? She felt herself nearing a decision. What that decision was, she wasn't sure, but there was a direction to her thoughts now, and it had the inevitable momentum of an avalanche. The seventh bell was ringing from some distant tower as Tok the Younger passed into the Empire headquarters. He showed his invitation to yet another grim-faced, intense guard, and was grudgingly allowed to continue on down the main hall to the dining chamber. Unease churned in Tok's stomach. He knew the adjunct was behind the request, but she could be as unpredictable and as manipulative as the rest. Beyond the doors he now approached might as well be a pit filled with vipers, all hungrily awaiting his arrival. Tok wondered if he'd be able to keep anything down, and knowing the condition of his facial wound, he then wondered grimly if anyone else would be able to keep anything down. Among his fellow soldiers, his scars were barely noticed. Rare was the soldier in Dujek's army who did not carry a scar or three. Those few friends he had seemed simply thankful that he still lived. In the Seven Cities, superstition held that loss of an eye was also the birth of inner sight. He had been reminded of that belief at least a dozen times in the last couple of weeks. There had been no secret gift granted him in exchange for his eye. Flashes of searing light ripped through his mind every now and then, but he suspected that was no more than a memory of the last thing his eye had seen. Fire. And now he was about to sit among the loftiest company in the Empire, barring the Empress herself. Suddenly the wound was a thing of shame. He had sit there as testament to the horrors of war. Tok stiffened just outside the dining room door. Was that why the adjunct had invited him? He hesitated, then shrugged and entered. Dujek, Taishren, and the adjunct turned as one to regard him. Tok the younger bowed.
"Thank you for coming," Adjunct Lorne said. She stood with the two men near the largest of three fireplaces, in the wall opposite the entrance. "Please, join us. We're now awaiting but one more guest."
Tok strode to them, thankful for Dujek's grin. The High Fist set his crystal goblet down on the mantel and deliberately scratched the stump of his left arm.
"Bet it's driving you half-crazed," the old man said, his grin broadening.
"I scratched with both hands," Tok said.
Dujek barked a laugh.
"Join us in a drink."
"Thank you."
He noticed Lorne's appraisal as he accepted a goblet from Dujek. Taking the decanter from a nearby table, his glance crossed the High Mage, but Taishren's attention was fixed on the roaring fire behind Lorne.
"Has your horse recovered?" the adjunct asked.
Tok nodded as he filled his goblet.
"Doing handstands, the last time I looked in on her," he said.
Lorne smiled tentatively, as if unsure whether he was mocking her.
"I've explained your vital role in keeping me alive," Tok the younger. "How you loosed four arrows on the fly and brought down four Barghast."
He looked at her sharply.
"I didn't know I had the last two shots in me," he said.
He sipped wine, resisting the urge to scratch his wound. Dujek grunted.
"Your father was also in the habit of surprising people. There's a man I miss."
"I too,"
Tok replied, looking down. The awkward silence that followed this exchange was mercifully broken by the arrival of the last guest. Tok turned with the others as the door swung open. He gazed at the woman standing in the entrance, then started. Was that Tattersail? He'd never seen her wearing anything but battle garb, and was now stunned.
"My," he thought wonderingly, "she's not bad, if you like them big, that is."
He half grinned. Lorne's response to Tattersail's appearance had sounded much like a gasp. Then she spoke.
"We have met before, though I doubt you'd remember."
Tattersail blinked.
"I think I would have recalled that," she said cautiously. "I think not. I was but 11 years old at the time."
"Then you must be mistaken. I'm rarely in the company of children."
"They burned the Mouse Quarter a week after you swept through it, Tattersail."
Lorne's voice made everyone stiffen with its barely controlled rage.
"Those survivors, the ones you left behind, were resettled in Mox Hole. And in those plague-ridden caverns, my mother, my father, and my brother died."
The blood drained from Tattersail's round face. Bewildered, Tok glanced at the others. Dujek's expression was masked, but there was a storm behind his eyes as he studied Lorne. On Taishren's face, As he looked upon the sorceress, there dawned a sudden light.
"It was our first command," Tattersail said quietly.
Tok saw Lorne trembling and held his breath. But when she spoke, it was controlled, the words precise.
"An explanation is required."
She turned to Hyphus Dujek.
"They were recruits, a cadre of mages. They were in Malar City, awaiting their new commander, when the Master of the Claw issued an edict against sorcery. They were sent into the old city, the Mouse, to cleanse it. They were..."
Her voice caught.
"Indiscriminate."
She swung her attention back to Tattersail.
"This woman was one of those mages. Sorceress, that night was my last with my family. I was given to the Claw the very next day. The news of my family's death was kept from me for years. Yet,"
her words fell to a whisper,
"I well remember that night. The blood. The screams."
Tattersail seemed unable to speak. The air in the room had grown thick, stifling. Finally, the sorceress prized her gaze from the adjunct and said to Dujek,
"Hyphist, it was our first command. We lost control. I resigned from the officer corps the very next day and was posted with another army."
She gathered herself.
"If it is the adjunct's wish to convene a court, I offer no defense and will accept my execution as a just penalty."
Lorne replied,
"That is acceptable."
She laid her left hand upon her sword and prepared to withdraw it.
"No," Hyphus Dujek said. "It is not acceptable."
Lorne froze. She glared at the old man.
"You seem to forget my rank."
"No, I haven't. Adjunct, if it is your will that those within the Empire who have committed crimes in the Emperor's name must be executed," he stepped forward, "then you must include me. Indeed, I believe High Mage Taishran also has his share of horror committed on the Emperor's behalf. And finally, there is the Empress herself to consider. Lassine, after all, commanded the Emperor's Claw. She created it, in fact. More, the edict was hers, thankfully short-lived as it was."
He turned to Tattersail.
"I was there, Tattersail. Under Whiskey Jack's command, I was sent down to rein you in. Which I did."
She shook her head.
"Whiskey Jack commanded?"
Her eyes narrowed.
"This has the taste of a god's game."
Dujek swung back to the adjunct.
"The Empire has its history, and we each are in it."
"In this," Taishan rasped, "I must agree with the High Fist adjunct." "There's no need to have all this official," Tattersail said, her eyes on Lorne. "I hereby challenge you to a duel. On my behalf, I shall employ all my magical skills in an effort to destroy you. You may defend with your sword, adjunct."
Tok took a step forward. He opened his mouth, then closed it again. He'd been about to tell Tattersail that Lorne carried an Ota Terril sword, that the duel would be grossly unfair, that she'd die within seconds, as the sword devoured her every spell. Then he saw that the sorceress knew all that. Dujek rounded on Tattersail.
"Damn it, woman! Do you think everything hinges on how it's worded? Execution? Duel? None of it matters one whit. All that the adjunct does, all that she says, is on behalf of Empress Lassine."
He spun to Lorne.
"You are here as Lassine's voice, as her will, adjunct."
Taishren spoke softly.
"The woman named Lorne, the woman who once was a child, who once had a family."
He looked upon the adjunct with anguish in his eyes.
"That woman does not exist. She ceased to exist the day she became the adjunct.
Lorne stared at the two men, her eyes wide. Standing beside her, Tok watched those words battering her will, crushing the anger, shattering into dust every last vestige of identity. And from her eyes rose the icy clinical repose of the adjunct to the Empress. Tok felt his heart pounding hard against his chest. He'd just witnessed an execution. The woman named Lorne had risen from the turgid mists of the past, risen to right a wrong, to find justice, and in that last act reclaim its life. And she had been denied. Not by the words of Dujek or Taishrin, but by the thing known as the adjunct.
"Of course," she said, removing a hand from her sword. "Please enter, Sorceress Tattersail, and dine with us."
The flat tone of her voice told Tok that her invitation had not cost anything, and this horrified him, shook him to his very core. A quick glance showed a similar response from Taishrin and Dujek, though the latter veiled it. Tattersail looked positively ill, but she nodded shakily in answer to the adjunct's invitation. Tok found the decanter and a spare crystal goblet. He walked up to the sorceress.
"I am Tok the Younger," he said, smiling, "and you need a drink."
He poured the glass full and handed it to her.
"Often, when we camped on the march, I'd see you lugging that travelling wardrobe of yours around. Now I finally see what was in it. Sorceress, you're a sight for a sore eye."
A look of gratitude entered Tattersail's gaze. She raised an eyebrow.
"I hadn't realized my traveling wardrobe garnered such attention."
Tok grinned.
"I'm afraid you've provided a standing joke in the second. Anything surprising, be it an ambush or an unplanned skirmish, the enemy invariably came from your traveling wardrobe, sorceress."
Dujek guffawed behind him.
"I've often wondered where that phrase came from, and damn, I heard it a lot, even from my officers."
The atmosphere in the room relaxed somewhat, though undercurrents of tension still swirled. They seemed to be between Tattersail and High Mage Taishrin. The sorceress turned her gaze upon Lorne whenever the adjunct's attention was elsewhere, and Tok could see the compassion there, and his respect for her rose considerably. In her shoes, any look he gave Lorne would have been filled with fear. And whatever storm threatened between Tattersail and Taishrin seemed born of a difference in opinion coupled with suspicion. It didn't look personal. Then again, Tok considered, Dujek's steady presence may have been providing the leveling influence. His father had spoken much of Dujek, of a man who never lost his touch with the powerless or the less powerful. In dealing with the former, he always made his own failings an easy recognition. And with the latter, he had an unerring eye that cut away personal ambition with the precision of a surgeon removing septic flesh, leaving in its place someone who treated trust and honesty as givens. Studying Dujek's easy, relaxed rapport with the others in attendance, including himself, and then with the servants who filed in bearing trays of food, it struck Tok that the man had not changed perceptibly from the one Tok the Elder had called friend. And that impressed Tok deeply, knowing as he did the pressures that burdened the high fist. As soon as everyone was seated and the first course presented, it was Adjunct Lorne who took command, however. Dujek relinquished it without a word or a gesture, evidently confident that the earlier incident was now over as far as the adjunct was concerned. Lorne addressed Tattersail in that uncanny, flat voice.
"Sorceress, permit me to compliment you on besting a Hound of Shadow, and on your timely recovery. I know that Taishrin has questioned you regarding this incident, but I would like to hear the tale from you directly."
Tattersail set down her goblet and regarded her plate briefly before meeting the adjunct's steady gaze.
"As the High Mage may have explained, it's now clear that the gods have entered the fray. Specifically, they've become involved with the Empire's plans for Darujistan.
Tok rose quickly.
I believe, he said, I should excuse myself now, as what will be discussed here exceeds...
Be seated, Tok the Younger, Lorne commanded. You are the Claw representative here, and as such, you are responsible for speaking on its behalf.
I am?
You are.
Slowly Tok sat.
Please continue, sorceress.
Tattersail nodded.
Opon is central to this gambit. The Twin Jester's opening move has created ripples. I'm sure the High Mage would agree with this, and thus attracted the attention of other gods. Shadow Throne,
Lorne said. She looked to Taishrin. The High Mage concurred.
One could expect such a thing. I, however, have sensed nothing of Shadow Throne's attention upon us, even though I pursued that possibility vigorously after the Hound's attack.
Lorne exhaled slowly.
Sorceress, please go on. The Hound's presence was triggered entirely by accident, Tattersail said, flicking a glance at Taishrin. I was doing a reading from my deck of dragons and came upon the card of the Hound. As with all adepts, I found the image animate to a certain extent. When I gave it my full concentration, it felt,
she cleared her throat,
as if a portal opened, created entirely from the other side of that card, from High House Shadow itself.
She raised her hands and gazed steadily at the High Mage.
Is this possible? The Shadow Realm is new among the houses, its full power not yet expressed. Well, whatever happened, a portal, a rent, the Hound gear appeared.
Then why, Taishrin asked, did it appear in the street? Why not in your room?
Tattersail smiled.
I can speculate. Please do, the adjunct said. I have wards about my room, Tattersail said. The innermost of these are High Thir.
Taishrin started at that, clearly surprised.
Such wards, Tattersail continued, create a flux, a tide of power that surges and ebbs like a pulsing heart, one that is beating very fast. I suspect that these wards were sufficient to bounce the Hound away from my immediate area, since in its transitional state, halfway between its realm and ours, the Hound could not fully express its powers. Once it had arrived, however, it could, and it did.
How did you manage to fend off a Hound of Shadow? Taishrin asked.
Luck,
Tattersail replied without hesitation. Her answer hung in the air, and it seemed to Tok that everyone had forgotten their meal.
In other words, Lorne said slowly, you believe that Opon intervened? I do. Why?
Tattersail barked a laugh.
If I could work that out, adjunct, I'd be a happy woman. As it is,
her humor fell away.
It seems we're being used. The Empire itself has become a pawn.
Is there a way out?
Dujek asked, his words a growl that startled everyone. Tattersail shrugged.
If there is, it lies in Darujistan, since that's where Opon's gambit seems centered. Mind you, Hyphist, drawing us into Darujistan might well be what Opon seeks to achieve.
Tok sat back, absently scratching his wound.
There was more to it, he suspected, though he could find no discernible source for his suspicion. He scratched harder. Tattersail could be glib when she wanted to be. Her story had a straightforwardness to it. The best lies were the simple ones. Still, nobody else seemed unduly suspicious. The sorceress had shifted attention from her story to its implications for future action. She had everyone thinking past her, and the faster their thoughts raced, the farther behind they left their doubts about her. He watched her watching the others, and was the only one to notice the flash of triumph and relief in her eyes when Lorne spoke.
Opon is not the first god seeking to manipulate the Malazan Empire, the adjunct said. Others have failed, come away bloodied. It's unfortunate the lesson was lost on Opon, and on Shadowthrone, for that matter.
She sighed deeply.
Tattersail, whatever your differences with the High Mage, it is necessary, no, vital, that you work together in seeking to discover the details of Opon's intervention. In the meantime, Hyphist Dujek will continue preparing his legion to march, as well as solidifying our hold on Pale. For myself, I will be leaving the city shortly. Rest assured, my mission has goals identical to yours. Now, one last thing.
She turned to talk.
I wish to hear the clause evaluation of the words that have been exchanged here.
He stared in surprise. He had assumed the role she had expected of him without even realizing it. He sat straight and glanced at Tattersail. She now looked nervous, drawing her hands beneath the table. He waited until their gazes locked and held before he turned to the adjunct.
"Insofar as she knows it, the sorceress speaks the truth," he said. "Her speculations were genuine, although concerning the dynamics of magic, I am at a loss. Perhaps High Mage Tayshrin could comment on that."
Lorne seemed vaguely disappointed with Tok's evaluation, but she nodded anyway and said,
"Accepted, then. High Mage?"
Tayshrin released a slow breath.
"Accurate," he said. "Speculation is sound."
Tok refilled his goblet. The first course was removed almost untouched, but as the second course arrived, everyone turned their full attention to it, and conversation ceased. Tok ate slowly, avoiding Tattersail's eyes, though he sensed them upon him time and again. He wondered at his own actions, deceiving the adjunct of the Empress, the High Mage, and the High Fist all in one shot, struck him as rash, if not suicidal. And his reasons for doing so were not entirely rational, which made it all the more distressing. The second had a long, bloody history. More times than Tok could count, someone had come through for someone else, whatever the odds. And more often than not, it had been the Mage Kadra. He had been there on the plain outside Pale, and he had watched with a thousand others the Kadra being torn apart, hopelessly outmatched. That kind of waste didn't sit well with the second. And though he was a claw, the faces that surrounded him, the faces that looked upon him in hope, despair, and, at times, fatal resignation, those faces had been mirrors of his own, and they defied the claw at every turn. The years in the claw where feeling and caring had been systematically assailed, those years failed to withstand the day-in, day-out reality that was the Second Army. This night, and with his words, Tok had given something back to Tattersail. Not just for her, but for the Kadra. It didn't matter if she understood, and he knew she must be feeling bewildered by his actions. None of that mattered. What he had done for himself. He sat up.
"Now that's odd," he thought. "My wounds stopped itching."
Feeling lightheaded, Tattersail wobbled every now and then as she walked down the hall toward the door to her room. She knew it wasn't the wine. With her nerves as frayed as they were, that fine vintage had tasted like water, and had had as much effect. Adjunct Lorne had raised in the sorceress memories she'd spent years burying. For Lorne it had been a pivotal event, but for Tattersail, it had been just one nightmare among many. Still, it had pushed her where other crimes had not, and as a result, she'd found herself attached to the Second Army, the army she'd been sent to as a recruit, the closing of a circle. But in that time, she had changed. That attachment, those 20-odd years of service,
had this night saved her life. She knew that Tok the Younger had lied for her, and the look he had given her prior to starting his evaluation had been a message she had understood. Though he had come to the second as a claw, as a spy, not even his years of training within that secret organization could withstand the new world in which he had found himself. Tattersail understood this all too clearly, for the same had happened to her. The sorceress in a cadre of mages who had entered the Mouse Quarter so long ago had cared naught for anyone but herself. Even her attempt to cut herself away from the horrors of which she had been part had been born of a selfish desire to flee, to absolve her own conscience. But the Empire had denied her in this. An old soldier had come to her the day after the slaughter in the Mouse Quarter. Old, nameless, a veteran sent to convince the sorceress that she was still needed. She well remembered his words.
"Should you ever outrun the guilt within your past, sorceress, you will have outrun your soul.
When it finds you again, it will kill you." And then, rather than deny her desperate needs absolutely, he'd sent her into a veteran army, the Fifth, until the time came for her to return, to the Second, to a place under the command of Dujek One-Arm. With that, she had been given a second chance. Tattersail came to her door and paused to sense the condition of her wards. All was well. Sighing, she entered her room, then leaned against the door as it closed behind her. Captain Parron stepped out from the bedroom, his expression wary and somehow shy.
"Not under arrest? I'm surprised."
"So am I," she replied.
"Herlock was here," Parron said. "He instructed me to give you a message."
Tattersail studied the man's face, seeking a hint of what he was about to deliver. He avoided her gaze and remained standing near the doorway into the bedroom. "Well?" she demanded. Parron cleared his throat. "First he was, excited. He knew of the adjunct's arrival and said she wasn't alone."
"Not alone? Did he explain that?"
Parron shrugged. "Said the dust walks around the adjunct, the dirt shifts beneath her boots, and the wind whispers of frost and fire." He raised his eyebrows.
"Does that explain anything?
Damned if I know." Tattersail strode to her dresser. She began to remove the scant jewelry she had donned for the dinner.
"I think it does," she said slowly. "Did he say anything else?"
"He did. He said that the adjunct and her companion were leaving Pale soon, and that he intended to track them. Sorceress..."
She saw that Parron was struggling with something, as if fighting his every instinct.
Tattersail laid one arm on the dresser and waited. When he met her gaze, her breath caught.
"You were about to say something,"
she said, her voice low. Her heart was pounding all too fast, and she felt her body responding as if of its own accord. The look she had seen in his eyes had been clear in its meaning.
"I know something of the adjunct's mission," he said. "I was to be her contact in Darujistan."
Whatever had been building between them disintegrated as Tattersail's eyes went hard and anger darkened her face.
"She's going to Darujistan, is she? And you and she were to oversee the long-awaited demise of the bridge burners. Together, you thought you'd be able to kill Whiskey Jack, to cut down his squad from within."
"No."
Parron took a step forward, but when Tattersail shot out her hand, palm facing him, he froze.
"Wait," he whispered. "Before you do anything, just hear me out."
Her fear warren surged into her hand, eager for release.
"Why? Damn Opon for letting you live! Tattersail, please!"
She scowled.
"Speak!"
Parron stepped back and turned to a nearby chair. Hands held out at his sides, he sat down and looked up at her.
"Keep those hands there," Tattersail commanded, "away from your sword."
"This has been the adjunct's personal mission, from the very start.
3 years ago, I was stationed in Idgo Khan, officer corps. One day, every available soldier was mustered out and marched to a section of the coast road. Paran's hands had begun to shake, and the muscles of his jaw stood out. What we saw there, Tattersall, you would not believe. She recalled Quick Ben and Kalam's story. A massacre. A company of cavalry. Astonishment showed on Paran's face. How did you know?
Go on, Captain, she grated.
Adjunct Lorne arrived from the capital and took charge. She guessed that the massacre had been a diversion. We began upon a trail. It was not a clear one, not at first. Sorceress, may I lower my arms?
Slowly. On the chair arms, Captain.
He sighed gratefully and sat down his trembling forearms as she'd instructed. Anyway, the adjunct determined that a girl had been taken, possessed by a god.
Which god?
Paran made a face. Come now, if you know of the massacre, is it hard to guess? That company was killed by Shadowhounds. Which god? Well, Shadowthrone comes to mind, he said sarcastically. The adjunct believes Shadowthrone was involved, but the god that possessed the girl was the Rope. I know of no other name for him. The patron of assassins, Shadowthrone's companion. Tattersall dropped her arm. She had closed her warren a minute earlier, since it had begun to push hard, and she had feared she didn't have the strength to resist it much longer.
You found the girl, she stated dully.
Paran sat forward. Yes.
Her name's Sorry.
You're aware of this, Paran said, sinking back into the chair. Which means that Whiskey Jack is also aware, since who else could have told you? He looked up into her eyes with a clouded expression. I'm now very confused.
You're not alone, Tattersall said. So all this, your arrival, the adjuncts, it was all a hunt for the girl?
She shook her head.
That's not enough. It can't be enough, Captain.
It's all that I'm aware of, Tattersall. She studied him for a moment.
I believe you. Tell me, what are the details of the adjunct's mission?
I don't know, Paran said, tossing up his hands. Somehow I was the one she'd be able to find, so my being with the squad would bring her to the girl.
The adjunct's talents are many, Tattersall mused. Through the antithesis of sorcery, she might well possess the ability to have linked with you, especially if you've been in her company for the past 2 years.
Then why isn't she breaking down your door?
Tattersall's eyes were on the jewelry scattered on the dresser. Opon severed the link, Captain.
I dislike the thought of exchanging one set of shackles for another, Paran grumbled.
There's more to this,
Tattersall insisted, more to herself than to the captain.
Lorne has a Talan Imas with her.
Paran jerked upright.
Hairlock's snide hints, she explained. I believe the mission was twofold. Kill Sorry, yes, but also kill Whiskey Jack and his squad. The Talan would not be involved if her plan concerned just you. Her Otateral sword is sufficient to destroy Sorry, and possibly kill the Rope as well, assuming that's who's possessing the girl.
I would not like to believe that, Paran said. They are my command, my responsibility. The adjunct would not betray me so.
Wouldn't she? Why not?
The captain seemed at a loss to answer her, but there was a stubborn glower in his eyes. Tattersall reached the decision she had sensed was coming, and it left her cold.
Hairlock left too early. The puppet was eager, too eager to pursue the adjunct and that Talan Imas. He must have discovered something about them, about what they're up to.
Who is Hairlock's master? Paran asked.
Quick Ben, Whiskey Jack's mage.
She looked to him.
He's the best I've seen. Not the most powerful, mind you, but smart. Still, if the Talan Imas comes on him unawares, he won't stand a chance, and neither will the rest.
She paused, her eyes holding on the captain.
I have to leave Pale, she said abruptly.
Perrin shot to his feet. Not alone.
Alone, Tattersail insisted. I have to find Whiskey Jack, and if you're tagging along, then Lorne will find him too.
I refuse to believe the adjunct presents any risk to the sergeant, Perrin said. Tell me, can you succeed in killing Sorry, even with Quick Ben's help? The sorceress hesitated.
I'm not sure I want to, she said slowly.
What?
It has to be Whiskey Jack's decision, Captain. And I don't think I can give any good reason for convincing you of that. I just feel it's right.
She felt herself relying on instinct in this matter, but vowed to hold true to it.
Even so, Perrin said, I can't remain hiding here, can I? What do I eat? The bedding?
I can get you out into the city, Tattersail said. None will recognize you. Take a room in an inn and stay out of your uniform. If all goes well, I'll be back in 2 weeks. You can wait that long, can't you, Captain?
Perrin stared. And what happens if I just walk out of here and introduce myself to Dujek One-Arm?
The High Mage Taishren would shred your brain with truth-seeking sorcery, Captain. You've Opon's touch. And after tonight, Opon is now an official enemy of the Empire. And when Taishren's done, he'll leave you to die, which is preferable to the madness that would grip you if he kept you alive. He'll show you that mercy, at least.
Tattersail anticipated Perrin's thoughts.
Dujek might well seek to protect you, but in this, Taishren outranks him. You've become a tool of Opon. And for Dujek, the safety of his soldiers takes precedence over his pleasure in frustrating Taishren. So, in fact, he might not protect you at all. I'm sorry, Captain, but you're truly alone if you walk.
I'll be alone when you leave, too, Sorceress.
I know, but it won't be forever.
She searched his eyes and felt compassion welling behind her own.
Perrin, she said, it's not all bad. Despite all the distrust between us, I'm feeling things for you I haven't felt for anyone in, well, in some time.
She smiled sadly.
I don't know what that's worth, Captain, but I'm glad I said it anyway.
Perrin gazed at her for a long minute, then said,
Very well, Tattersail. I'll do as you ask.
An inn? Do you have some local coin?
Easily acquired.
Her shoulders slumped.
I'm sorry, but I'm exhausted.
As she turned to the bedroom, her gaze fell on the dresser top one last time. Amid a small pile of underclothing, she saw her deck of dragons. It would be foolish not to do a reading, considering the decision she'd made. Perrin spoke close behind her.
Tattersail, how thorough is your exhaustion?
She felt the heat in his words triggering a smoldering fire beneath her stomach, and her gaze slid away from the deck as she turned to face the captain. Though she voiced no reply to his question, her answer was clear. He took her hand, surprising her with such an innocent gesture.
So young, she thought.
And now he's leading me into the bedroom. She would have laughed if the act hadn't been so sweet. False dawn played the eastern horizon as Adjunct Lorne guided her mount and packhorse out from Pale's east gate. True to Dujek's words, the guards were nowhere in sight, and the gate had been left open. She hoped the few sleepy eyes that had followed her through the streets had only mild curiosity behind them. In any case, she was dressed in simple, unadorned leather armor. Her face was mostly hidden in the shadow cast by the plain bronze helmet's brow guard. Even her horses were a local breed, sturdy and placid, much smaller than the Malazan war horses with which she was most familiar, but a comforting ride nonetheless. It seemed unlikely that she would have attracted undue attention. More than one unemployed mercenary had left Pale since the Empire's arrival. The south horizon was a jagged line of snow-capped mountains. The Tarlin Mountains would remain on her right for some time, before the Rivi Plain swept past them and became the Catlin Plain. Few farms broke the flatlands around her, and those that did crowded the city's own lands. The Rivi people were not tolerant of such encroachments, and since every trade route that led to and from Pale crossed their traditional territory, those of the city wisely refrained from angering the Rivi. Ahead, as she walked her horses, the dawn showed its face with a streak of crimson. The rain had passed a few days back, and the sky overhead was silver blue and clear, a few stars dwindling as light came to the world. The day promised to be hot. The adjunct loosened the leather thongs between her breasts, revealing the fine male hauberk beneath. By midday, she would reach the first wellspring, where she would replenish her supply of water. She ran a hand across the surface of one of the bladders strapped to her saddle. It came away wet with condensation. She passed her hand across her lips. The voice that spoke beside her jolted her in the saddle, and her mount snorted in fear and sidestepped.
"I will walk with you,"
Onos Tulan said,
"for a time."
Lorne glared at the Talani mass.
"I would rather you announced your arrival," she said tightly, "from a distance."
"As you wish."
Onos Tulan sank into the ground like so much dust. The adjunct cursed. Then she saw him waiting 100 yards ahead of her, backlit by the rising sun. The crimson sky seems to have cast a red flame about the warrior. The effect jangled her nerves, as if she looked upon a scene that touched her deepest, oldest memories. Memories that went beyond her own life. The Talan Imas stood unmoving until she reached him, then fell into step beside her. Lorne tightened her knees about the horse's shoulders and closed the reins until the mare settled down.
"Do you have to be so literal-minded, Tul?" she asked.
The desiccated warrior seemed to consider, then nodded.
"I accept that name. All of my history is dead. Existence begins anew, and with it shall be a new name. It is suitable."
"Why were you selected to accompany me?" the adjunct asked.
"In the lands west and north of Seven Cities, I alone among my clan survived the 28th Jagat War."
Lorne's eyes widened.
"I thought those wars numbered 27, she said quietly. "When your legions left us after conquering Seven Cities, and you marched into the wastelands..."
"Our bonecasters sensed an enclave of surviving Jagharts," Tul said. "Our commander, Logros Talan, determined that we exterminate them. Thus we did."
"Which explains your decimated numbers upon returning," Lorne said. "You could have explained your decision to the Empress. As it was, she was left without her most powerful army, and no knowledge of when it might return."
"Return was not guaranteed, adjunct," Tul said.
Lorne stared at the tattered creature.
"I see."
"The cessation of my clan's chieftain, Kig Aven, was accompanied by all my kin. Thus, alone, I am unbound to Logro. Kig Aven's bonecaster was Kilava Onas, who has been lost since long before the Emperor reawakened us."
Lorne's mind raced. Among the Malazan Empire, the Talan Imas were also known as the Silent Host. She had never known an Imas as loquacious as this Tul. Perhaps it had something to do with this unbounding. Within the Imas, only Commander Logros ever spoke to humans on a regular basis. As for the Bonecasters, Imas shamans, they stayed out of sight. The only one that had ever appeared was one named Olar Ethil, who stood alongside the clan chieftain Aetholos Ilm during the Battle of Kartul, which had seen an exchange of sorcery that made Moonspawn look like a child's cantrip. In any case, she had already learned more of the IMAS from this brief conversation with Tool than was present in the Empire annals. The Emperor had known more, much more, but making records of such knowledge had never been his style. That he had reawakened the IMAS had been a theory argued among scholars for years, and now she knew it to be true. How many other secrets would this Talan IMAS reveal in casual conversation? "Tool," she said, "had you ever met the Emperor personally?"
"I awakened before Galad Catan and after Onak Shendok. As with all the Talan IMAS, I knelt before the Emperor as he sat upon the first throne."
"The Emperor was alone?" Lorne asked.
"No. He was accompanied by the one named Dancer."
"Damn," she hissed. Dancer had died beside the Emperor. "Where is this first throne, Tool?" The warrior was silent for a time, then it said,
"Upon the Emperor's death, the Logros Talan IMAS gathered minds, a rare thing that was last done before the diaspora, and a binding resulted. Adjunct, the answer to your question is within this binding. I cannot satisfy you. This holds for all Logros Talan IMAS, and for all Kron Talan IMAS."
"Who are the Kron?"
"They are coming," Tool replied.
Sudden sweat sprang out on the adjunct's brow. Logros's legions, when they first arrived on the scene, numbered around 19,000. They were believed now to number 14,000, and the majority of those losses had come beyond the Empire's borders in this last Jaghut War. Were another 19,000 IMAS about to arrive? What had the Emperor unleashed? "Tool," she asked slowly, almost regretting her need to persist in questioning him, "what is the significance of these Kron coming?"
"The year of the 300th millennium approaches," the warrior replied.
"What happens then?"
"Adjunct, the diaspora ends."
The great raven called Crone rode the high winds above Rivi Plain. The northern horizon was now a green-tinged curve, growing more substantial with every hour of flight. Weariness weighed down her wings, but the heaven's breath was a strong one. And more, nothing could assail her certainty that changes were coming to this world, and she drew again and again upon her vast reserves of magical power. If ever there was a dire convergence of great forces, it was now, and in this place. The gods were descending to the mortal soil to do battle. Shapings were being forged of flesh and bone, and the blood of sorcery now boiled with a madness born of inevitable momentum. Crone had never felt more alive. With these unveiling of powers, heads had turned, and to one Crone flew in answer to a summons she was powerless to ignore. Lord Anamanda Rake was not her only master, and for her this only made things more interesting. As for her own ambitions, she would keep them to herself. For now, knowledge was her power. And if there was one secret more alluring than any other she might covet, it was the mystery surrounding the half-human warrior called Caladan Brood. Anticipation lifted Crone's wings with renewed strength. Steadily, Black Dog Forest spread its verdant cloak over the north. Chapter 10. Kalor said,
I walked this land when the Talaan Imas were but children. I have commanded armies 100,000 strong. I have spread the fire of